Hey, Micah, I left something for you in your office. Did you get it?
In my office. Hold on. Did y'all see something in my office? Tiff said she left something for me.
No, you didn't get. I sent you a package.
What did it look like? I didn't see anything.
Well, it was brown, like everything from Amazon.
Oh wait. Oh, I just underneath my desk. I just kicked it by accident. I didn't realize.
Oh, okay. You should open it up. I sent you presents.
Okay.
Actually, I do have a real present for you. I just haven't sent it.
Wait, what?
I'll send it for you for Christmas, but it's very small. It's not as big as the package Michael received.
Yeah. Our dear friend, Michael Scott, we are on episode 14 of season 2. And this episode is called The Carpet. And good old Michael Scott had a nice package left on his carpet.
Speaking of, presents and stuff, this was aired on my birthday originally. So
no
my
way.
Present was...
Your present was this episode? You poor dear. That's awful.
I know. It's kind of perfect and terrible all at the same time.
Of all the episodes.
Back in January 26, 2006, I get this beautiful present.
Back when you were 4.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
4? How old do you think I am?
Oh, no. I know. I was probably 4. No.
Oh, no. I don't want to talk about that at all.
I was not 4 in 2006. Please, for the love of God, do not listen to me.
You should not have been watching The Office.
Exactly. I was too young to be watching The Office. No wonder why I am who I am today. It was transformative, this package. No. This is a pretty grody episode, Tiff. I don't know about you. I tend to not be too affected by, talking about gross things. And, those things don't usually turn my stomach. I can remember the one time I ever got sick to my stomach while watching a show. It was watching, because I don't usually watch this show, but I was watching The Walking Dead. And there was just, a particularly grody zombie. And for some reason, it's sort of disfigured, melty, diseased face.
Don't make our audience sick.
Right. Hopefully nobody's eating right now. Made me sick to my stomach. And I was like, whoa, that's weird. I usually don't get sick watching shows. And so this episode, even though it's gross and I, I'm grossed out by the fact that this happened, it doesn't really turn my stomach. So I'm curious for you, do these types of things turn your stomach, or has anything ever turned your stomach while you're watching a show?
I mean, yeah, definitely. Stuff upsets me and I can't watch. It's just super gross. But this, I feel like they did it really well, because the camera crew got a shot of the thing, kind of.
The thing.
But it wasn't really distinctive. I've seen a couple screen grabs and stuff on the internet of people trying to actually see what it looked like. For some reason, they wanted to see it closer, but it's not that bad. And they treat it well, and they use a lot of euphemisms throughout the episode. I think even Pam says something somebody did something bad to Michael's carpet. Maybe that's all we need to know, right?
Yes.
And that's kind of how the episode goes on. And yeah, people talk about the smell and what is it? And it's this thing, and it was a hate crime, and it was out of love, and we're all over the place with this. But they never explicitly say that someone pooped in Michael's office, even though we all figure out that that's what happened.
And I wonder too, because
everyone pooped in Michael's office.
Yeah, it could be. It's a conspiracy. I do wonder though, I wonder what the original script looked like, and whenever it had to go through, because typically anytime something gets written by a studio or what have you, then the writers hand it off to the network. So in this case, NBC's They're sort of lawyers and sort of decency police almost. And so a lot of things end up getting cut during that period of time. And I wonder if this originally was more they maybe said those words and then they decided to cut back, or if it was just always sort of this, because it is funny in and of itself that they never say exactly what it is. And that to me is a bit of the humor that's involved in it. So I do wonder if that is intentional or if they ended up having to do a rewrite to make it more decent.
Well, I don't really see The Office and the writers, the way they write in previous episodes, going to that gross place. I mean, there is in the future, there's a vomiting scene, but but that I think multiple, that was right? Like as far. Well, there's the group vomiting one.
That one's hilarious. I love that one so much.
No. Oh, well.
And Pam's look afterward. I know we're not there
oh
yet.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I love that scene.
So that's like the only really like foul thing I could think of happening. So I would tend to think that this is just good writing and not a result of censorship. But yeah, I do want to talk about the cold open a little bit, because it is pretty telling and fun and sets the scene for the little minor B plot that's going on with the Pam and Jim situation. And we start off with Ryan at Pam's desk because Pam's on vacation, because she waited as long as she possibly could to take vacation, which was like 13 days into January, which is really funny to me. Like, she's like, I just can't. I had to take it all now. And Jim has this incredible instinctive muscle memory that then becomes a joke of always looking over at Pam's desk. And Ryan is like a little bit weirded out by this. Like, why is he always looking over at me? This is strange. But Jim like just essentially can't help himself because he's so used to doing it. It's been his daily life for years. So it's just kind of telling how instinctive it is for Jim to be doing that. We also get a really good Pam name in the beginning of this episode.
Oh, yeah.
Right? The Spamster.
Spamster.
Which is Pam plus Spam.
Plus as hamster.
Michael adds, plus hamster.
Which is like, what? I have no idea. We need to probably come up with each other's, at some point, each other's like Michael nickname, Michael-inspired nickname.
Ooh,
or,
yeah.
Better yet, listeners, you should suggest Michael Scott nicknames for both Tiff and I, or
that
Tiff and me.
That sounds great.
That would be awesome. So send in your Michael Scott style nicknames for Tiff and me, and we'll have to give a Dundee to the winners of those. Whoever.
Yeah,
gets
I'm going to let this one fly for a while. I think I'm going to bring it up a couple times to make sure we get some really good entries.
Yes. Oh, I'm excited, Spamster. yeah, that I always love whenever we have those moments between Michael and Pam, because they sort of, there's a lot that's opposite about them. Mm-hmm. They're not foils of each other at all, but they're humorously different in ways that makes it so fun whenever Michael comes in and just does whatever he does. And Pam is so used to his antics at the same time. And the way that she handles him just sort of like a small child is pretty fantastic.
Yeah. Her diffusing tactic is basically to not engage with Michael. But I think that only makes him engage more, because he's trying to get some sort of reaction out of her, whether it's good or bad. And she's giving him nothing, essentially. And I just love the dynamic between the two of them trying to work that out with each other, because Pam keeps giving nothing, Michael keeps giving more and more, and like, it's not that it's not working, but it's just it's like blocking each other. It's very, very good. I have a bit of trivia.
Ooh.
From the very beginning of this episode, because right off the bat, we have Michael discovering the thing as he walks into his office, and he's at first confronted with a very strong smell. And Steve Carell apparently threw a stink bomb into his own office, you know,
no
the,
way.
The set, without telling anybody else that he did that. So the smell that everyone is experiencing is real and an actual surprise.
So when Kevin gets trapped in there, there's really...
Yes, a stink bomb had gone off in there before they started filming.
Oh my word, that's incredible.
I know, that's so good, right?
Oh, good job, Steve Carell.
So and yeah, why does he lock Kevin in there?
I don't get it. I hate it so much.
I hate it too. It's like, why would you hold the door? Like, yes, yeah, send someone in if someone's gonna go in, but then don't close them in.
And Pam is like freaking out. Let him out. Let him out. I'm like, please let him out.
Oh, it's such a just a childish thing to do. And then I like how the confessionals very quickly after that literally become confessionals, like the camera is interrogating everybody about who might have done it.
Yes.
And everyone has a various degree of, oh, it wasn't me, but yet they still find it really funny.
They're all laughing.
And gross at the same time. So there's a lot of mixed emotions going on about what happened on Michael's carpet.
It's sort of one of those moments where you go, I mean, someday something had to happen to him kind of thing. You know, it's about time that somebody like stands up to the guy. No one's surprised, I guess. Yes, it is quite a surprise. And of all the things that you can do, this is pretty doggone grody. But at the
it's horrible. Who would do that?
Right. Why?
Yeah. And
how?
It's not even the person getting the poop office, but it's also the person giving the poop office. Like, why would you do that? It almost feels like humiliating and terrible to even perform that situation, the making of it's so terrible.
I agree. I don't understand it at all. But it's sort of like, I think it was Ryan that even said this. It was one of them, like, maybe it was Oscar. I don't understand it, but I get it, or something like that. And it's like, I don't understand it, I don't get it, but also I kind of get it. Like, if this was based out of retribution, I kind of get it. And it wouldn't surprise me if at the end of the episode it was revealed that that one dude who got like the $3, what was it, like Chili's gift card or something, mm-hmm. ended up being the one that went into his office and did that thing.
So finding the thing in the office kind of becomes a catalyst for Michael moving out of his office and the office getting cleaned and the carpet changed and all kinds of stuff happening. There's a lot of upheaval happening. And I really like the look of Michael's confessionals in this episode, because he at first tries it in his office and he can't handle it after the cleaning lady has come and cleaned it up as best she could. It still smelled and he had to get the carpet changed. But he then moves into the conference room with all of his stuff. And so the rest of his confessionals, all of his stuff from the office is kind of piled up behind him. And I love that. And we see him move into the workroom. And that then is kind of a domino effect where it moves Jim's desk. And we see right as Pam gets back from vacation. So, like, you know, they get to kind of get back into their normal repartee with each other. Jim gets kind of bumped back into the annex, mm-hmm. and away from Pam again. So they both spend the day apart, even though it's kind of essentially understood that it's their first day back together at work. And I think that whole dynamic is really, really great, especially when we throw Jim into the lion's den of Chatty Kelly.
That's one of the best moments where he comes back there and she's like, oh, you're going to be back here, going to be sitting by me. Like, Toby used to sit by me, but he had an allergy and had to move. And it's like, oh my gosh, you have no idea, Jim, what you're getting yourself into. It's going to be so bad. And it ends up being pretty doggone bad. But at the same time, like, Jim is sort of he's trying to make the best of a potentially annoying situation, I think, mm-hmm. which I appreciate. He helps Kelly with her relationship stuff, but in doing so sort of learns a bit about himself in the process. And I like that. I think that was well executed.
Yeah, we see Chatty Kelly, which is it was building, and now it's like we get full on Kelly. Like, I feel like this episode is kind of her premiere episode for the character that she ends up being, and it sets the tone for it all. And it's revealed her interest in Ryan, and Jim gets kind of mixed up between them, and he essentially becomes like the high school note, like, do you like me, check yes or no, like, that's ends up being his role, like, back and forth, because they aren't communicating with each other, but they're like half communicating through Jim, and like, don't tell him this, and you tell him a little bit of that. And I really like that setup that Jim is thrown into this situation. In the meantime, while Jim is ping-ponging between Ryan and Kelly, Michael is bored. And I feel like a bored Michael is a very dangerous Michael. Yeah. It's a productivity ruining Michael. And he is just all over the office, just making a big mess of things, even bigger mess than what was left in his office.
Yes. This is the deal. You cannot let Michael get bored. He becomes a runaway train that just can't stop. Runaway train, never coming back. he just takes it and runs with it because, like, in his office, he has all those things to sort of entertain him and stimulate his brain and things to play around
with. That's
probably
why he has all those toys in there, because it stops him from getting too bored and then, like, the boredom leaking out of his private office into the workroom, right?
Yes.
That door and that office is keeping him in there away from everyone else. So he goes around the office making a big mess of things, and
he literally raids the accounting department with the help of Dwight. But we do have this cute moment where when it comes time to sort of wreck Angela's area of the desk, Dwight just barely does anything at all because he doesn't want to upset Angela, whom he loves. And I thought that was very sweet.
But he also doesn't want to disappoint Michael in that he's not being like a dude bro, like hanging out.
Yes,
he does wants both. Me. He's like, I can hang, but I'm also not going to do this. Michael decides. He compares his office mess to terrorism. His comparisons to what happened to him, it escalates throughout the day. Like, at first, it's like, oh, who could do that? That's so gross, and this is weird. And then he starts with being bored, he decides to have a sales contest. And a lot is going on in this episode because I feel like Michael is just perpetual motion and he's jumping around to all kinds of things and you just can't contain him if he's outside. It's almost like Pong, right? Like, he'll just hit all of the walls because there's no way to, like, hold him in. And so he promises the crisp $100 bill for the person that could beat him, or the person that sells the most, right, during the day. And it ends up being $83 because that's all he has in his pocket, typical Michael fashion. And also in typical Michael fashion, the contest quickly comes to a screeching halt after some gloating by Michael, because what happens but he overhears people bad-mouthing him a little bit. And he gets all petulant like a child and decides to quit the contest and gets increasingly frustrated and flustered about everything that's going on.
The one thing that I want to mention is his little moment where he, like, holds on to the money instead of...
He was trying to put it up on the wall, and he was going to, like, prop it up behind a little picture. So it was kind of out displaying for everybody. And Daryl and Roy, but I think it was probably more because of Daryl, that he decides not to put it out in the open because he's afraid of Daryl stealing it in front of everybody. And that is just...
You see Pam and, like, the sort of reacts to this going, oh, brother, because it's just bad. It's just bad. And it's
perpetuating stereotypes. It's Michael reacting to really poor learned behavior about, you know, people and what they would do because of how they look. And it's all wrong. And, you know, again, it's one of those things in the office, they show a character doing something very wrong, but it makes you, the audience, and the rest of the characters see how wrong that is. So maybe the next time, like, you would have those feelings, or anyone would have those feelings, maybe this weird little comedy show might diffuse it and might change your mind because you saw someone doing it and how ridiculous it really was.
Yes.
And I think that that's kind of overall a good thing, that the humor and the political moments of this show, even as fleeting as they seem to be, are kind of important.
Yeah, this is what I remember us talking a little bit about this in the beginning of the show, whenever we first started doing the podcast. That's one of the main things about this show that I really, really enjoy. Because sometimes people will say, why the heck do you like this show? Like, all of these bad things that go on and the things that Michael does. And it is important to broach these subjects in different ways because different people learn in different ways, and there are different methods to sort of hop over or go under our sort of it's almost an evolutionary instinct to fall prey to cognitive dissonance, wherein mm-hmm. we have these beliefs and we don't like to change these beliefs. And when our beliefs are challenged, it's almost like physically painful for us to have our beliefs challenged. And in order to sort of skirt past that pain, or to somehow beat back cognitive dissonance, there are different methods by which we can achieve that. And humor is one of those methods. And in this show, we see so clearly how cringy it is when someone mm-hmm. takes things to this level, and then people go, like, it's almost as if their brain doesn't get a chance to go, oh no, this is, you know, this is hurting me because I don't want to believe that this is what I look like or what I end up acting like whenever I'm being whatever racist or what have you. And they see it and then they sort of process afterward. And so it gets through. And mm-hmm. that is why I am a huge fan of this show for those reasons, for social reasons, because I think that it does, it's capable of changing minds by showing what people can sometimes look like whenever they are trying to be well-intentioned but are being ignorant. Because I think mm-hmm. that's where most of the problem lies. It's not in the super extreme people who we already sort of alienate because they are super extreme and not great people. It's really the people that are sort of middle of the road that mm-hmm. ignorance is more of a thing than like active, you know, hatred or what have you. So yeah, I agree with you wholeheartedly. I think that's what makes the show great in those very cringy moments. And I'm glad that, that this show exists for that reason.
Yeah, yes. All of those things. Just sitting here, just totally nodding along with you. But where were we? Michael was taking his ball and going home. Basically, with the contest. A lot happens in this episode. Like, it is very jumping around all over the place, and I'm really glad we took the time to talk about that little moment that speaks so loudly sometimes.
Yeah, we get an introduction to Ed Truck for the first time. Mm-hmm. Michael is hilarious in his way of getting Ed Truck to come and talk to him, his poor pension. He's like, oh, it was a clerical error. And so...
Oh, with Michael doing that, I needed to... It's so consistently Michael. We saw him doing stuff like this in the past already, even as early as season 2, he has like baited people under false pretenses for things. And we will continue seeing him do things like this in the future. Like, it's that moment with Ed Truck is completely in the language of Michael Scott.
Absolutely. It's 101% Michael Scott. And he talks to Ed Truck and ends up getting annoyed with Ed Truck, because this always happens to Michael. When someone tells him that people he works with can't be his family, he does not like to hear that. He wants to be the best of best friends with his employees. And Ed Truck's like, why can't your friends be your friends and your employees be your employees? And Michael doesn't want to hear that. So he was sort of trying to get advice from Ed Truck on how to handle this situation and what Ed Truck did, because we find out that it happened to him as well. And he just doesn't get the advice that he wants from the guy.
Yeah. I mean, he never really talked about Ed Truck in a really delightful way anyway, because Michael did not enjoy Ed's management style, which seemed like he was just a real regular manager. And to Michael, that was just, why would you do that? It has to be so much more than that, which I kind of appreciate, that charming side of Michael, where he cares so much about this job and the people he's working with. It takes it to a really endearing place, because he's not just saying, this is the job I go to, I do my job and I go home, I am management robot. Like, he really does genuinely care, and that's why his emotions end up being so extreme a lot of the times, and his reactions to things, because he has such strong feelings about everybody. And mm-hmm. I feel like he goes through all of these emotions in this episode, where at first it's disbelief that this thing has happened, and then he gets you know, a little bit down about it, and he gets punchy, and then he gets accusatory, and then he gets sad again, and then his emotions are moving all over the place with trying to come to terms with his relationship with the people in the office, because he's questioning what's going on here. Like, how could someone poop in your office and still be your friend slash family. Like, if they don't think of me as their friend and family and they're doing this act of terrorism to me, like, then who are they and who am I? And this is like his most important relationship is this job.
Oh,
I know. It's so sad, right?
Yeah. And it is sort of earth shattering for him in a way. It's not ideal for him at all. He just wants to be loved and to love in return, as it were. And yeah, they do not want to give him that.
I love the little moment that it breaks up kind of the what Michael's going through and Michael's antics throughout the office. When you get that little clip shot of Roy and Daryl sleeping in the office after they took out the carpet, and it's just like the camera shot through the blinds of them sleeping in there when they were supposed to be working. Cause Michael's like, they could build a home on, what's that TV show where they build homes for people that need homes? But whatever. It's like, if they could build a reality TV show home in a day, like, you can't even change a carpet. And then they're in there sleeping and the camera catches them. It's one of those great moments that the camera documentary style catches that you normally wouldn't see if it were like typical sitcom, or it would be done differently, you know.
Yes, and exactly.
So I really like the way that they're caught doing that, and it kind of shows Roy and Daryl's work ethic right now.
Non-existent work ethic.
Yeah, well, they do work really hard, but this job feels very you know, we're helping Michael. You know, you don't want to really rush helping Michael because he's kind of a jerk sometimes.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah, their work ethic, like, down in the warehouse for sure. And honestly, like, why are they doing this in the first place? This is
that's probably another reason why they're in there sleeping, because it's like, this isn't my job.
I'm not supposed to be replacing carpet in a room. This doesn't make any sense. They should, like, the company should have brought in a carpet company to do it. It is very odd that this is how that worked out. So, like, I would take all day too. I don't know how to install carpet.
Yeah, I mean, why work harder than you, like, you know, stall your day? It's
very
like, oh,
Stanley.
All day I'm gonna change this carpet and this is what I'm doing today.
They confront me about it, I'm like, I'm not a professional carpet installer, so yeah, it's gonna take a while.
It smelled really bad, so I had to go slower, which makes no sense. Actually, I would go faster if it smelled really bad.
That's true.
Anyway, but Michael gets a little phone call.
Mm-hmm.
From a good friend.
Yeah. So there's a ring, 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 ring. And our dear, 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 dear enemy, Todd Packer is on the phone.
I wouldn't even call him a frenemy.
I hate it. He's a bad, bad guy. He asks Michael if, he got a, it sounds a little bit like the beginning of this episode, actually, now that I think about it.
Huh. Oh, yeah. Very weird similar. That That's so strange.
Weird.
I know.
Huh. We're very on brand. Yeah. So he's asking him if he got the package that Todd Packer left for him. And Michael has no idea what he's talking about.
He even goes out to the office and is like, hey, anybody see a package? And he's saying it's pretty big. And like, oh God.
And then this is what I don't understand. So we talked earlier, like, if this was based out of, anger, it's already hard to accept. But this was not based out of anger. This was Todd Packer thinking it was funny and doing this thing. How is this funny at all? This is not funny in the least, slightest, tiniest bit. There's nothing funny about this.
I mean, look at all of his other jokes. None of them are funny. You know, and this is like an extreme, gross, vulgar joke that no decent person would ever, ever think is funny. But yet, Packer does.
Yes, Packer. I mean, I guess that in and of itself is like the litmus test for what is a good joke and what is a bad joke. The fact that Packer thinks this is funny is proof enough that this is the worst thing that you could do to somebody.
It's like he has absolutely no filter. He has absolutely no fear, and he has absolutely no decency. Like, he is the epitome of all of those terrible personality traits that usually are only present like one at a time in a person, but he has them all.
No filter, no fear, and no decency.
Yeah,
that's good. That's really good. That's a great description.
But how does Michael see it? Michael sees it as done out of love, and now he changes his mind out of everything.
He's celebrating about it.
He's so desperate to have a friend in Packer because it's the only person that is actively always joking around with him.
Yeah, even like giving him attention.
Yeah, but even though it's like veiled in all of these horrible jokes that he kind of tells about Michael, it's such a dysfunction. It's an abusive relationship. That's what it really is.
Yes. When it boils down to it, it's an abusive relationship.
Yep. So Michael just leaves the whole thing of slapping his knee and be like, ah, that hoot. Like, that was a great joke. You know, he was accusing everyone else of terrorism, but it's a great joke.
Since it came from Packer, then it's a good joke. No, buddy, it's still very, very bad. But yeah, Michael is okay with it now. Mm-hmm. And so I like that pretty much wraps that up. We've got Michael doing that. But we do have another sweet moment between Jim and Pam. So as we mentioned earlier, of course, Jim had been separated from Pam all day. He was in the back helping Kelly with her weird relationship deal with Ryan. And Pam the whole day has been leaving voicemails for Jim. And this is what was interesting to me is like, this comes just after Jim. This is like the most, I think, immature. Maybe immature is the wrong word. Immature or impatient or something. It was the oddest moment for me where Jim had just called this gal and asked, like, he was asking her out, basically. So he's on the phone talking to her.
Well, it was Brenda from the
out.
Booze Cruise.
Yes.
Old What's-Her-Face? What did Michael call her?
Oh, gosh. What did he call her?
Yeah, it's good old What's-Her-Face, the smart little cookie from
from the Booze
corporate.
Cruise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Corporate gal. And
who
so
asked a girl out on the phone.
Yeah, right? And so he does that. But then, you know, it sort of in the moment looks like Jim going, okay, I need to move on. This is not what I should do. But then you see him getting these phone calls or these voicemails from Pam, and he's got this huge smile on his face. And it's almost as if suddenly she's forgotten about. Brenda's forgotten about. Corporate gal is forgotten about. And
see, that doesn't bother me because
he just vacillates, though. It's like you gotta, at some point, like you can't just move on for half a moment and then something can. I guess what I'm saying is like the fact that he was separated for Pam from a day was all it took for him to try to move on. And then the moment that he's reconnected with her, then he's done trying to move on. I'm annoyed by the fact that he lost feelings enough just by being away from her for a work day to place the call, because there's no way if he had stayed sitting where he was that he would have placed that call to this gal and tried to get a date. But he spends just a little bit of time away from Pam and he's already ready to move on. It's weird.
See, I don't see he's ready to move on. I see he's trying to move on. And okay. So I think that, and it, to give him credit, it is still just a phone, like he just left a message for her. He didn't even like talk to her, you know, like nothing really happened. And those messages from Pam were, you know, they would make you smile. It's showing like a deep friendship. It's showing Pam's humor. It's reminding Jim what he really likes about her, you know?
Yeah. And but why did he forget those things for the like 8 hours he was away from her?
No, I don't think he ever forgot. He never forgot, but he was like, well, this is one thing I can do to try and help myself move on because I can never be with her. You know, you never forget, right? It's just you're just trying to you're trying to take the first steps. So I don't think it was a forgetting thing or a malicious thing or a fickle flip-floppy thing. I think it was just I'm trying to do this one thing and then ill-timed or perfect-timed, who knows, you get this message from this person and it's like the cutest, sweetest thing and you fall hard all over again, you know? Like,
yeah, I get that's fair. Maybe.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the difference. I actually like that we have this dialogue because, like, I'm so team Jim Pam.
You really are.
I do.
It's so sweet. It's sweet.
I'm happy when anyone gets together. I'm just happy when people have happy relationships.
Oh, thank you for making me sound like an absolute curmudgeon.
You are. That's it. You're the worst.
I'm so negative. I hate it all. I hate love. No,
love stinks.
I like that we disagree, though, on this as well. Yeah. At different times. Because, I get where you're coming from.
And you're I see where you're coming from.
Oh, good. See, we can at least accept that each other have different opinions on it. I mean, who knows? You could be right. I could be right.
Who hurt you, Micah? Who hurt you?
I just...
You're like, I can't get into that.
Right, yeah. We only have like 35, 40 minutes.
Yeah, we got to give out some Dundies.
Yeah. So anyway, who knows? Listeners, you're of course welcome to chime in on that, whether Jim is just ready to hop, pop, and move on to the next thing, or if it's just him trying to do right by himself.
Although I did think of you and that last, the word that they came up with for something in your shoe. I was like, ooh, that's such a good low definition word.
Ooh, right? Yes.
For those of you who are incomparable listeners, game show, low definition. That sounded good to me. It perked up my ears and I was like, ooh.
We'll have to link up low definition. That's such perked a up? Fun game.
Perked up. I like making up words.
Yeah, like Shakespeare. Like low definition. It's fun. Yeah. All right. So I think that just about wraps things up, which means that it's time to hand out the Dundee for this week. And folks, I cannot tell you enough how excited I am about this Dundee. It is called the Perfect Party Planner Award, and it's going to go to a Carmen Ramos. A listener, Angel Dominguez, sent in this tweet to us, or rather a direct message conversation showing us that Carmen put together the most awesome party for Angel's birthday. So she played Dwight and their niece played, I can't remember, another character, and they did like a dinner party scene, but they also had a bunch of other stuff involved. So for one, they had these little cut out Dundee awards in gold construction paper, it looks like.
They even had candles by Jan, and some of them were the Obsession by Jan, Insanity by Jan. What are some of those other ones?
I think like Psychopathic by Jan.
Oh, it was so funny. And they dressed up and they had this great party and everything was on theme. And it is just absolutely epic. Epic.
Yeah, we'll have to link up some of the, especially there's a photo gallery of one where it shows the characters dressed up as Dwight, and then the woman who came with Dwight, which is hilarious. And then Kevin is in there, and the guy's wearing a bald cap even. Oh, it's so incredible. And like, I just wish someone loved me enough to throw this level of party. See, someone must have hurt. That's what happened. No one's thrown me an office themed party. That's who hurt me. Everybody hurt me, Tiff.
See, I really want one of the It Is Your Birthday parties.
Oh, me too. With like half blown up balloons.
Yes, and, all brown and gray. Yes. That's what I want. That's what one I want day. For my next birthday.
Marco, you're listening, right? Let's make this happen.
Oh, he listens.
Yes. So that is the Perfect Party Planner Award. Carmen Ramos and the niece as well. You both have done a fantastic job. We've linked both of them in the show notes so you can follow along and see all of those great things that they came up with.
And this was a nominated Dundee. So listeners out there, feel free to nominate anyone you know for a Dundee, and you can tell us why. And I thought that this was a really cool way to find somebody, because it wasn't just something someone is doing, it's a nomination for something someone else did.
So, yeah, and Frank,
it's very cool.
If we're honest, like the last one was sort of a nominated, or was it the last one? Yeah, the last one was sort of
nominated them.
Yeah, and so did other, like we got so many tweets about.
Or I should say, we shouldn't be the only people that nominate.
There
other
you
go. People can
exactly.
nominate with us, and then we can pick.
Yes, it helps us for sure. And we appreciate whenever you send them in to us. And so, yes, thank you so much for that. And just thank you for being awesome. That's so cool. Such a fun time. All right, Tiff, time to say goodbye. Yes.
All right. Well, yeah, I want to give a big thanks to all of our listeners for all of their pretty packages that they leave for us all over the internet. Do you like that? I like that.
That's great.
Anyway, we're over on Twitter at @tall_beats. We have a super awesome secret Slack, not so secret Slack, over at the Incomparable for membership. We have iTunes review stuff that we love when you leave those. So all over the place. And until next time, keep your packages to yourselves. Oof. And we will see you back at the office.
Hopefully there are some deals on new carpet. I need somebody to come install some new carpet here.